I'm certainly happy that you're here tonight. Invite you back Wednesday night, at that time when Jason will be teaching the class, I believe. It'll be on the story of Amnon and Tamar. It sort of gives you an idea of the lineage and how Solomon finally became the king. And so come back over the next few weeks as we finish up the book of 2 Samuel. I don't know about you, but I'm a fan of biographies. I enjoy the biography channel. I watch it on occasion when I have opportunity. And I just like to see the background of people, how they get from point A to point B in life. Somebody once said that a biographer never knows enough. They say an autobiographer knows too much, but God knows everything. Tonight I want to talk with you for a few moments on the subject, Paul Harvey's line, the rest of the story. When you start with Genesis in chapter 6 through 8, you immediately, if you've been in the church any time at all, you recognize the context of Noah and the building of the ark. You might ask the question, though, whatever happened to Noah after the flood? The rest of the story with Noah. Did he just ride off into the sunset, 600 years old, 601 years old, lives another 350 years to ride off into the sunset with? Or did Noah, just after he got off Mount Ararat, did he finally just go down and just settle down and sit on the front porch and watch the rainbows pop up from time to time and think about what had happened? Well, the story begins in chapter 6. In chapter 6, we see that God is grieved by the sins of mankind. And then after that, he commissions this fellow Noah, who finds grace in the eyes of the Lord. He commissions this man at about 480 years old to build an ark. He's supposed to build an ark over the next 120 years and also preach to get people converted to the Lord over the next 120 years. At the end of chapter 6, we see, "And thus Noah did, according to all that God commanded him, so he did." In fact, over in 1 Peter and in chapter 3 and in verse 20, 1 Peter chapter 3 and in verse 20, well, we see there, 1 Peter chapter 3 and then verse 20. It says, "Who once were disobedient with the patience of God, kept waiting in the days of Noah, during the construction of the ark, in which a few, that is, 8 persons, were brought safely through the water." But then we see something else in Genesis chapter 7, just a chapter over. Genesis chapter 7, it says, and in verse 16, "Those that entered, male and female of all flesh, entered as God had commanded them, and the Lord closed it behind them." Some of the newer version says he closed the door. You imagine what that was like. This ominous feeling that you're never going to see any of these people ever again. Your friends, your neighbors, your relatives. And what was getting ready to happen? No doubt the landscape was going to be changed forever. What gives people problems today with the landscape of saying that the earth is millions and billions of years old. But only 8 remained alive besides the animals in the ark. In chapter 8, Noah leaves the ark a couple of months after the waters begin to abate. In chapter 8 and in verse 20, it says, "And Noah built an altar to the Lord, and took of every clean animal and of every clean bird, and offered burnt offerings on the altar." People ask the question a lot of times, was this a real story? Was this a real story? Or was it make-believe? Well, we see over in Matthew chapter 24, there when Jesus is talking about, first of all, the destruction of Jerusalem. He goes on in chapter 24 of Matthew in verse 37, Matthew 24 verse 37. He said, "For the coming of the Son of Man will be just like the days of Noah." In fact, over in 2 Peter and in chapter 2 and in verse 5, 2 Peter chapter 2 and in verse 5. 2 Peter 2 and in verse 5. "We see and did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a preacher of righteousness with seven others, when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly." So we see Jesus mentioning Noah. We see that Peter mentions Noah as well. So evidently this must have been an actual account of what had happened. This was a historical event. But what happened? What happened with Noah? The rest of the story. In chapter 9 of Genesis, they pick up the reading in verse 1. Genesis chapter 9, verse 1. Genesis 9, verse 1. "God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth." Down to verse 8 through 10. It says, "And then God spoke to Noah and to his sons, saying, Behold, I myself do establish my covenant with you, and with your descendants after you, and every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, the beasts of the earth with you, and all that comes out of the earth, even every beast of the earth. I establish my covenant with you, and my flesh shall never again be cut off by the water of the flood, neither shall there be any flood to destroy the earth." In verse 12, it says again, "This is my sign of the covenant that I'm making between me and you and every living creature that is with you in all successive generations. I will set a bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a sign, a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come about when I bring a cloud over the earth, a bow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And never again shall the water become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bowl is in the cloud, then I will look upon it to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth." Verse 20. Noah began farming, planted a vineyard. He drank of the wine and became drunk and uncovered himself inside the tent. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers outside. But Shem and Jephthah took a garment and laid it upon both their shoulders and walked backwards and covered the nakedness of their father, and their faces were turned away, so they did not see their father's nakedness. When Noah awoke from his wine, he knew what his youngest son had done to him. Verse 28-29. Noah lived 350 years after the flood. So all the days of Noah were 950 years. And he died. 3 points tonight, and the lesson's yours, very quickly. Point number one, God wasn't finished with Noah just yet. He had been through quite an ordeal, no doubt. To build an ark for 120 years when there was no rain. To be a preacher of righteousness for 120 years. To never see a person after the ark is closed again except your family. And as they're fruitful and multiply. You would think that at this point in time that God would allow him to go into retirement. You know, it's 600 years. You know, we can retire at, some people retire at 55, or some people 62, or 65, or 67, or 70. But after 600 years, seems like you would earn some sort of retirement. But God wasn't finished with him just yet. In fact, we see the terminology that's used in chapter 9 of Genesis. He uses terminology like God blessed, God spoke, God said. God blessed Noah and his sons. He promised Noah and his sons that he wouldn't destroy the earth with water anymore. In chapter 9, we just read. Charged him to fill the earth. And the application is a very simple one to all of us. And that is, many times we finish our life before God is finished with us. Maybe God's not finished with you. Certainly, maybe you need to be baptized into Christ. But after you're baptized into Christ, God isn't finished with you. It might be the fact after you're baptized into Christ that maybe you have to learn a whole new language. Maybe your language is one that's just very pathetic. Concerning the fact that maybe you're always cussing. I hear people cussing all the time, always using the same words over and over again. Cussing, cussing, cussing. To become a child of God, you learn to use a whole new language sometimes. Maybe you learn to be honest in everything that you do. Maybe you weren't honest before. Dishonest person. But now you're going to be honest because you're a child of God. Maybe you learn to love other people because at one time your life was filled with selfishness. And now you want to love other people and help other people. Maybe you retire. Say, well, I hear this said sometimes, I served my time. Well, maybe it's not that God just finished with you just yet. Maybe you feel lousy. On a good day you feel lousy. But maybe God isn't finished with you just yet. I want you to continue to be the light of the world, salt of the earth, whether you're a new child of God or whether you're a seasoned saint. Another point. Point two. Half the lesson's over. God expects righteousness at whole, not only righteousness in a crowd. You're not only supposed to be righteous when you're in the crowd, when you're in front of a bunch of people, when you're here, yeah, I'm going to be righteous. I'm not going to be unrighteous here in front of these people. But not only are you righteous in a crowd, but you're righteous at home as well. God expects that when you're alone. And what do we see with Noah here? All of a sudden, he was a preacher of righteousness for 120 years. as there is 120 years preaching righteousness, I take it there is an audience for 120 years for him to preach righteousness to. But all of a sudden, when he's alone, he acts totally different. Can you imagine? Can you imagine a church hiring a preacher for 120 years and he only converts one family? That's what Noah did. In public, the preacher of righteousness. But here's the rest of the story. He began to be a farmer. We just read that he planted a vineyard. He drank of the wine and was drunk. He became uncovered in his tent. In chapter 9, in verse 20 and 21, it says, Noah began farming, planted a vineyard. He drank of the wine, became drunk, and uncovered himself inside his tent. All of a sudden, a righteous man doesn't look very righteous, does he? A very dark place in the biography of Noah. But God expects righteousness. Not only when we're in a crowd, but when we're alone as well. Maybe when traveling. Maybe your whole family's traveling. Maybe, certainly social media today, what many people see and have access to with your life. Well, point number 3 in the lesson is yours for tonight. The good thing is, thankfully, God doesn't judge us on just one day. But God judges us on a lifetime. What we're able to do over a lifetime. There is something in each of our lives that we're not proud of, probably at least one day, if not more than one day. But now, God judges us over a lifetime. In fact, it says over in Hebrews chapter 11, and in verse 7, Hebrews chapter 11, and in verse 7, look at this concerning Noah. It says, chapter 11, verse 7, by faith Noah, being warned by God about the things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world, and he became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. That one day didn't stop him. He had a lapse of judgment that one day. But still, God doesn't judge us over just one day. God judges us over a lifetime of work. And that one bad episode, that one bad episode did not have to define the rest of his life. Thanks be to God. Noah's faith led him to see the invisible. I guess it hadn't rained yet. But Noah's faith prompted him to build that ark. Noah's faith had him to have an effect on his family, to be able to get his wife and his 3 sons, 3 daughters-in-laws on that ark in order for them to be saved. And he had an effect on the world. He condemned the world. And he gave them a choice. Either to believe God and to get on this ark, or to disbelieve God and be destroyed. And we see what almost everyone chose. We read it so casually. It says verse 28, chapter 9, Noah lived 350 years after the flood. You go back 350 years, in our day and time, that'd be 1667. Just right after the pilgrim. And 100 years before the birth of this nation. 350 years, that's a long, long time. And still, even though that didn't allow him to define his life that one time, it says that he was an heir of salvation. What will you be remembered for? What will I be remembered for? For serving God? What will we be remembered for over the course of a lifetime? The tombstones up in New York, they say. When you go into a cemetery there in New York City sometimes, I can't imagine too many cemeteries in New York City, but I'm sure they have to have a lot of them, as many people as they have. But I just wouldn't think they'd have that much space. But one of the cemeteries there in New York City, you pull in one of the first tombstones there. It doesn't have a name on it. It doesn't have a date on it. All it has is the words, forgiven. If that's what you want over your life, to be remembered as one who was forgiven. We'd encourage you tonight that if you need to respond to the gospel in any way by being baptized into Christ or to come back to your first love, invite you to come down while together we stand, while we sing.